Hey everybody, it's Ryan with Open in Indiana, and on this episode of Small Biz Indie, we have Christian Tombers, a sales expert with over 40 years of experience, and he's coming here today to share some of his expertise with us in what would normally be a very expensive and costly endeavor. This is advice from a sales expert. Christian, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Ryan. Thanks for having me be on the podcast.
Well, thank you for coming. Christian, one of the things that most commonly comes up when people think of sales training is the extravagant cost of attending a sales training session. One of the things that you preach, though, is that there really isn't a cost when you think about good sales training. Could you elaborate a little bit on what you mean when there is no actual cost to attending sales training with you?
Yes, Ron, I'd be glad to. As a lot of people know, you've heard the word price and you've heard the word cost. Price is what you pay for something, and cost is what's going to cost you or what you're going to pay for it in the long run. An example would be if you invest in something, let's say $100, and because of that investment, you're getting $100 and maybe even more than $100 back, your cost is really zero. You got your money back, so it costs you nothing. So I look at it as an investment, and with my sales coaching, what I do is I even protect my clients with a monkey back guarantee. And what that means, it's not money back, it's monkey back. The monkey is on my back to make sure you get your money's worth through my training and workshops. If you don't feel that you got your money's worth, I will give you a refund, no questions asked, and that's a lifetime guarantee for as long as the two of us are on the planet. So there's really no risk. You either feel that you got your money's worth, where you know you're going to get that investment back through additional sales, more customers, more clients, profitability, or you get your money back and didn't cost you anything. So either way, your cost winds up being zero for my sales coaching. And whatever you get from me, that's yours forever because I can't take it back. And pretty much what I offer is a sales coaching program that in the long run, really, if it works for you, it doesn't cost you anything. And if it, the goal, of course, is to make it profitable in the long run.
And so, Christian, you have a monthly sales training class that you offer to anyone who would like to come and brush up on their skills, right?
That's correct. I do, on the north side, I do have a workshop. Typically, it's the first Wednesday of the month, unless there's other circumstance because of holidays or vacations. And it's in Westfield at the First Merchants Bank in Westfield. It is from 1 o'clock to 5 o'clock. It is very intense. Some people tell me that I hit them with a fire hose of information as far as marketing and sales goes. And then you can attend further detailed classes afterwards. The best way to find out what time and what location these classes are going to be is go to my website, which is thinksales101, the numerals 101.com, thinksales101.com, or charlietangoproductions.com. And there's a place where you can check out where and when the classes are, and then sign up for the classes if you'd like to attend. Now, if for some reason Northside does not work for you, let me know, and I've got partners. We can arrange for other locations, north, southeast, west, central Indiana, wherever, out of state. And then we can even come to your own company if you have a staff and you'd rather have me do it in your own conference room, boardroom, or at a restaurant that you'd like to have it at. We can make arrangements. So I'm willing to work with you. And I've also offered the classes right now in both Michigan and Colorado, since I do have connections there. And if you know somebody in other states, we can make that happen too. So either way, it's very valuable to learn about it, because as some of you that have been in marketing sales know, nothing happens unless somebody sells something. Because I challenge you to look around the room or the car or wherever you are right now and pick something where a sale in the life of that product or service didn't happen. Because it doesn't matter what it is, somewhere, somehow, somebody had to sell something. And my definition of selling is really not pushing something down somebody's throat and making them become a customer. I prefer to teach people how to get the customer to want to buy. Because obviously, people don't like to be sold. People like to buy stuff, though. So why fight the system? Don't sell them. Get them to want to buy.
And so, Christian, that brings up an excellent point that I'd like to ask you to clarify on. What is the difference between selling a product or service and convincing your prospect that they want to buy it? What's the big difference there between those two things?
Well, the difference is a lot of people have a stereotypical negative impression of what salespeople do, and that's getting talked into something. And that's not what I teach. People have a need to either avoid some pain that is coming up or to gain some pleasure. And the result of avoiding pain or gaining pleasure is owning a product or service that'll help them do that. Or a combination of both. They might buy something that'll both help them avoid pain, gain pleasure together at the same time. And the whole thing is, very often customers may know that they have a pain or they want some kind of pleasure, they want something to solve a problem, but they're not quite sure yet which product or service is going to do that for them, or they might not even recognize that there is something going on that they need to fix. So I don't see myself so much as a salesperson. I'm more of a consultant or an educator. And there's a term called consultative selling. And what that is you basically educate the client, your customer, what all the different options are. And when I worked in the home improvement industry, I actually went through all the different options, including doing nothing, because doing nothing and leaving it the way it is an option. But we also discuss what the cost to the customer is to do nothing. It could cost them more in the long run than investing in a good product that solves the problem that will eventually wind up paying for itself. And that's pretty much the whole gist of the program that I teach, is helping my clients who come to my classes learn how they can help the customers avoid pain, gain pleasure, or both. Because people buy things for seven basic reasons. One is to save time, save money, health, comfort, convenience, safety, security, peace of mind, and pride and prestige. And if you can bring it down to one of those 7 points, then chances are that's what the customer wants, and then they'll want to buy your product or service. And if your product or service doesn't help them out, then you should thank them, ask for referrals, move on, because negative publicity travels 10 times faster than the positive publicity. In fact, positive publicity hardly travels at all, unfortunately, because that's what attracts people's attention, is all the bad news. So it's better to have a client that you walk away from if you really cannot serve them honestly and ethically in the way that works for them, where you're not taking food off their table and you're not causing more issues, than if they just left it alone. And I actually do business with a lot of business people who operate the same way. For example, an insurance agent, he will take a look at my portfolio and tell me whether I should switch or stay where I'm at. And if I stay where I'm at, he's not making any money. But because of that, I trust him, and he's my go-to person. If I have any questions, I'll go to him first, because I know he's going to treat me properly. He's kind of like a fiduciary. He's looking out for my best interest. And that's what salespeople need to do. They don't need to sell. They need to lay out all the options, educate the customer what all the choices are, and then let the customer decide what's going to work best for them, rather than shoving it down their throat and wind up with a cancellation 3 days later.
And so, Christian, what is a good response when a prospect has an objection about the price of your product? What's the best way to move forward from that spot?
Well, there's a couple of ways, and since we didn't rehearse the answers to these questions, I'll just kind of go off the top of my head. Very often, it's really not the price that they're so concerned about. Something that I've done with larger groups, I've asked groups, who here has a dentist that you enjoy going to? And just about everybody raised their hand and said, yeah, I've got my favorite personal dentist. And then I asked them, well, obviously you enjoy going to the dentist and you are being charged a certain price or fee. Insurance might cover some of it, but you still have to pay some out of your pocket. Let me ask a question. With the dentist that you have, would you agree there might be another dentist somewhere close by who is as good or maybe even better than your dentist and who may even charge a little bit less? Would you switch? 99% of the people ask the question, no, I'm going to stay with mine. Well, why is it? Because they're comfortable with the dentist they have, even though they know they might be able to get it cheaper someplace else. So sometimes it's not the price, it's just being comfortable with what you're purchasing. And if the price is too low, you might wind up paying for it again later if it didn't work properly or didn't last properly or was cheaply made. And we've all made that mistake. I've gone to hardware stores and gone through the bargain bin and bought these 50-cent screwdrivers that after the first time I got to throw it away. And then finally, I buy something a little more expensive, like a Craftsman brand, which, yeah, costs more, except I know, number one, it was made well to begin with, because otherwise it couldn't afford me to give that guarantee. And if something did happen to it, I can go back in and get a replacement. So it's a better investment to do it that way. So a price objection is not necessarily the price itself. People want to get a return on their investment. They want to know that the money they're putting into your product or into your service is going to solve a problem, help them avoid pain, gain pleasure, combination of both, and that if something does happen, there's something to back it up, just like I have a lifetime price guarantee, satisfaction guarantee. A lot of companies have that. Why can they do that? Because their product was good to begin with. That's why they can afford to give you that kind of guarantee. So it's price is not everything, because I have in my years learned sometimes going with the cheapest is not the best way to go. Cheaper can sometimes cost more. I'll give you a real quick numbers example. I had a client one time, I was quoting replacement windows in the home improvement industry, and he said, well, I can get a window that fits my house just as well as yours does, and they're half the price. I said, well, showing him samples of the product, I happen to have a sample of the competitor's product with me, and I showed him theirs and I showed him mine. I said, if price didn't matter, which one of these two would you want? Well, obviously they pointed to the better quality. I want a thicker, stronger, better made. And I said, well, forget about warranties and guarantees and how long a company's business. If you got stuck with this one or this one, which one do you think is going to last longer? Well, this one looks like it's going to last a lot longer, and it does cost more. And the other one probably won't last as long. Just by looking at it, you can tell that. So we went through some numbers. So, well, here's my product. Let's say doing a whole house of windows costs $10,000 with my product, top quality, lifetime guarantee, transferable to the next homeowner. We even had a glass breakage guarantee where just for a small $50 fee, didn't matter how big or large the window was, or didn't care whose fault it was that the window got broken, for $50, come out and replace the glass. And this is expensive thermal paint insulated, low argon glass. And the competitor's product, I personally had experience where customers had actually replaced them after just 5 years. They were starting to fall apart, not working, fogging up, didn't close, locks were coming loose, screws were stripping, the balances weren't working. So 5 years later, they were looking at replacing them again. Do people actually wind up replacing something right at the first moment that it goes bad? No, they live with the problem a little bit longer. So yeah, I might start having problems 5 years later, but they might wait six or 7 years before they actually go to replace it. So if you spent $5,000 for a window today for a whole house and then had to redo it 7 years from now, you're going to get the same price that you got 7 years earlier? Chances are probably not. It might cost you $7,000. So if you take the first $5,000 investment and then go through all the mess of having all those torn out again 7 years later and then add $7,000, now you're up to $12,000. And I was quoting them a price of $10,000, one time, lifetime guarantee, never have to do it again, with all kinds of backing as far as the company reputation, warranties, guarantees, and we even had a written fuel savings guarantee. We guaranteed our clients in writing that they're going to use a third less fuel to heat or air condition their house. If you compare 1 year with all our product and 1 year without our product. So even that was guaranteed, and I could even use current fuel prices, assuming that the cost of gas and electric or whatever cost to heat and air condition your home did not go up in the next 10 years, that even then it would pay for itself. And there's very few products that you can invest your money in 10 years later, get the money back, and the savings continues, and you still get to keep the product. Because a lot of times, 10 years later, you got to start all over again, like automobiles.
Very true.
Yeah, usually you wind up replacing them eventually one day. They don't pay for themselves very well. Unless you store it in a garage and don't touch it and keep it nice and clean, and then it becomes an antique many years later. So that's just one example. Price is not always the issue. It's solving the problem. Because if you, for example, needed to have some kind of important surgery that's going to save your life, are you going to shop price or are you going to shop quality? You're going to look for somebody who knows what they're doing so it's done right the first time.
So then it really boils down to the salesperson's ability to be able to convey the value that that product's going to have to them to overcome what price they're going to pay for it.
Correct. Yep. So it's again going back to price versus cost. I can buy a suit for $100. It's going to last me a year, and it's going to start becoming threadbare. It's going to start falling apart. It won't dry clean properly, and I'm going to have to buy another one the next year for another $100, and then another $100. And I can go buy a $300 suit, it's going to last 10 years. So which one's actually the cheaper one?
There you go.
You know, providing it doesn't go out of style, but most men's suits don't.
So, Christian, our next question is, how can I reduce my no-show meetings?
When you say no-show, that means you set an appointment, you show up, and the customer is not there.
Correct.
Well, one thing is, just through some courteous reminders, They could be kind of subliminal. You might call the customer a day before. I just want to make sure that I got the right address. So you're kind of subtly, hint, hint, reminding them that you're going to be there at that time. And you may even want to even go one step further and not just confirm the appointment, but also confirm how much time you're going to need for that appointment. Because if you, through your business, know that you're going to need at least 15, 20 minutes, half an hour, 2 hours to do a complete presentation, consultation with that client, and you show up and they only give you 10 minutes, then that's almost like a no-show if they have to leave, or one of the decision makers has to leave halfway through your presentation. Because if a decision maker has to leave, that could kill the sale right there, because the person who's still there who didn't leave might say, well, I got to get their opinion. And they're not here. They left 10 minutes ago. So it's a good idea to do a little bit of follow-up, and it could also be just 1 or 2 days before the appointment, send them a thank you by email saying, I just want to thank you and I'm looking forward to meeting with you. Some companies, the sales reps do not have to do that themselves. They have a telemarketing staff that'll set the appointment, confirm the appointment, and then the appointment, the lead is given to the sales rep to follow up on and to run that appointment. There are some techniques that a salesperson can use that I teach in my sales training classes, where if you have an appointment, for example, for in-home sales, where you go to the customer's house, I've developed several techniques on how you can reduce the percentage of people not being home, and none of those techniques require calling the customer. And people say, wait a minute, how do you do that? Well, it's just basically common sense techniques that I teach in my class. One of them, for example, is if the customer is not home, don't park in front of their house, because you don't know what their car looks like. They know they got an appointment with you, and here's this car that's not been there ever, sitting in front of the house with the person sitting in it. They think, oh, that must be that salesperson that wants to talk to us. Why don't we just keep on rolling and go shopping or go to a movie? And you don't know that the person just drove by you is the person that owns the house that you had an appointment with. So the best thing to do is to park a little further away from their driveway. We can still see their driveway, wait for them to show up, and don't pounce on them right away. Give them some time to, quote unquote, be home. In other words, take off their coats and put the groceries away and go to the bathroom and, you know, feed the dog and the cat. And then you show up 5-10 minutes after they showed up, and then you apologize for you being late. You don't have to tell them that they were late and you've been sitting down the street watching their house. Just simply take the responsibility, apologize for being late, and move on with the appointment. Because telling them that you've been sitting out there and they're late is just making them wrong, and that's not a good way to start any kind of a sales presentation or any appointment. So I just simply take responsibility for it. And if they admit, well, we just got home ourselves, go, oh, no problem, perfect timing then, isn't it? And sometimes I've shown up 5-10 minutes later and they're still putting groceries in the house, and I'll help them carry the groceries in. So whatever works. So that's just one of the techniques where I did not have to call the customer that helped reduce the not home rate. Another one, I'll give another fun one that kind of feels silly when you're doing it, except the only person feeling silly is you yourself, and that is when I get out of the car, customer's driveway, as soon as I get out of the car, I turn, look at the house, and I wave and say, hi. And then if they were hiding behind the curtains, they just got caught. If they weren't hiding behind the curtains, I was just saying hi to a house. If they were hiding behind the curtains, they got caught, and they can't pretend not to be home now because I just caught them. Did I know whether they're behind the curtain or not? No, but I had the lowest not home rate of anybody with all the companies that I worked for. That's just two of several different techniques that I developed. And again, that didn't require calling the customer. It's just something you do when you're out of the car. Just wave it out and say hi. Now, if the neighbors see you saying hi, they might think, oh, they must be home. And if they aren't home, well, you find out once you go knocking on the door and ringing the doorbell. And I've got some techniques that I teach how to do that effectively also.
And so, Christian, our last question today is, who should I call first when I have a new product?
Well, that's a good question, because when you have a new product, you get all excited. Oh my gosh, I got to get this product out to let people know about it. I would say start with your cream of the crop, the people that are most likely to benefit from the product. In advance, before you even do any publicity, promotions, advertising, emailing, sending out newsletters, flyers, brochures, or even going to trade shows, is have a brainstorming session either by yourself or with other sales reps in your company or in the companies of who would most benefit from this product or service. Sure, there's going to be a lot of people that may need the product, but you want to kind of cream the top first. And that's the whole thing, is make some money right now, right away. Otherwise, you've probably seen it many times. People are asked, salespeople, well, who's your client? Oh, everybody. Well, if you got everybody, that's overwhelming. There's a lot of everybodies on this planet. So what you want to do is boil it down to specific targets. And it's kind of like when you buy a brand new car, all of a sudden you see a whole bunch of other cars that are just like yours. And that's kind of the idea. If you have a product or service that's going to definitely help people that are in a certain situation, that have a certain need, where you can help them avoid some pain, gain some pleasure because of owning your product or service, I'd say target and focus on those first. And the other part is, once a buyer, always a buyer. If they bought from you once, chances are they're going to buy from you again. And those clients already have established a certain level of trust and relationship with you. So it's a lot easier for them to do business with you than you're working with somebody brand new, fresh, that has never met you. And now you got to build all that trust and belief and even credit and financing and paperwork and procedures. So if somebody's already bought from you, they're probably the best ones. And you can be excited to start talking about more about the product or the service that you have, this new product and product line that you have to offer, rather than talking about all this other stuff as far as who you are and what your credentials are and background is. So it just makes the sales process a lot easier. Once you get it going with clients that have already done business with you, build on that, because those will become references, referrals, testimonials, whether it be video, in writing, audio, all kinds of different ways so that you can help those first-time clients on a new product help you promote the people that don't know you yet, because then you get all the testimonials or referrals that are going to be more likely, hopefully, positive.
Excellent. Well, Christian, how can someone get a hold of you if they have any more questions that they would like to know beyond what we talked about today?
Well, the easiest way to reach me is through my website, and my company name is Charlie Tenger Productions, and charlietengerproductions.com, and thinksales101, the number is 101.com, thinksales101.com. Both lead to my same website, and that has a listing of all my services, all different workshops, classes, contact information. And you can also send me an email to CR Tombers, Charlie Romeo Tango, CR Tombers at gmail.com or at yahoo.com. I still like that Yahoo from back when they did their advertising. And if you need to talk to me personally, I do have a phone number that's actually fairly easy to remember. We're here in Indiana at area code 317. So 317-5, the number 5, and then sales, S-A-L-E-S, 5. So 5 sales 5, or 572-5375 is a translation of that if you don't want to figure out what the letters are on your phone. So it's 5 sales 5. And that'll go to my cell phone, and you can talk to me directly that way. But the best thing to do to get a lot of information, just go directly to my website, thinksales101.com.
Well, excellent. Christian, thank you for being our guest today. And for anyone who would like to ask Christian a question for our next installment of Ask Christian, go to openinindiana.com/ask-Christian and submit your question through our website, and we may cover it in a future episode. I'm Ryan with Open in Indiana. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Find everything for your business in our small biz marketplace. Visit henrymg.com/marketplace and save 10% off your first order with promo code SmallBizIndy. This podcast is produced by Henry Marketing Group of Indianapolis, Indiana. Get new episodes automatically on your preferred listening device by subscribing to Small Biz Indy in iTunes, Google, or on our website, henrymg.com/smallbizindy. For information on today's guest or to be a guest on Small Biz Indy, send us an email, info@henrymg.com.